Let's see where we got up to. We're on Kuf Yud Amid Beis, Boy Rava. I would assume that that's about 15 lines down from the top, if that makes sense. Yeah, Boy Rava, last two words in the line. Kanim Begezel Ager. Boy Rav, Ravi had the following suffix. How do we define the recipients of the Gezel Ager, the Kohanim, right? The Torah says that the money has to be given Lashem, and Lashem gives it over to the Kohen. How are the Kohanim to be defined? And he has two possible answers. Number one is Yarshim Havu. In other words, the Torah appoints or specifies the Kohanim to step into the shoes of the Yarshim of the Ger. They are the quasi-kilu substitute Yarshim. After all, the Ger dies without any Yarshim. Now the Kohanim become Yarshim. Or should we say Mekable Matonis Havu? Or should we assume that since there are 24 Matnos Kohuna, and we're going to see later on, we don't know this at this point, but listed amongst the 24, included in that enumerated list, is also Gezel Ager. They are receiving a gift, a matana. And whenever you give a gift, matana, that requires what we call a toras mamon. It requires the status of something of value. If on the other end is Yerusha, Yerusha doesn't have to be something of value. Meaning, you could have something technically that is an object, it's intact, it has no value on the market. And in such a case, a Yoresh would nevertheless inherit that object, even though it's valueless. On the other hand, if I want to give you a matana means I have to give you a gift that's worth something. A matana has a din of hakna to it. And if there's a din of hakna to it, then it has to be mamon. So what we're going to look for now is a situation where the gazlan stole something. Now the object is worthless, and can he fulfill his obligation of hashava by returning that object to the kohanim and saying to them, "Look, I know I'm not giving you anything of value, but on the other hand, you are the yarshim." And I would have given this back to your father, the ger, not your father, but I'm saying if they yarshim, to the ger himself, if he had yarshim. You are now the yarshim that are stepping into his shoes. Then therefore I'm going to give you back the exact object that you would have inherited from your father. Now I wrote myself a note here on the side of my Gemara. I wrote the following. Mitzad ha-gazlan, if we analyze this question from the perspective of the gazlan, ha-nosein ha-tashlum, if he's giving this payment as a penalty, b'toras maisa osham, as a kapara, because you remember that when the Torah spoke about paying up the kohen, it called it an osham, and we derived a number of halachas from that. Can't be returned at night, it can't be returned piecemeal, it has the din of an asham. So that's one way of looking at it. And in that case, it's just a nesina. But on the other hand, let's look at the Kohen from his perspective, mitzad hamakabel, he wants to be makabel kesef. Did the Torah just obligate the gazlan to do a perfunctory act of we call it, I call it a maisa osham, that's my own phrase, it means it's just to achieve kapara, or is the Torah saying that I have to give a gift that's received by the kohanim like any other gift, and it's got to be kabbalas kesef? In other words, the chiyuv of the gazlan is to make sure that the kohanim receive kesef. Kesef by Torah law requires shavius, it has to have some market value, otherwise it doesn't have a toras matana. So if we look from the perspective of the gazlan, you could define it as a maisa tashlum, in which he gives the object back to the kohanim, and he's mechaper by doing so. He's really rectifying his sin. He took something and he's returning it back. But if that thing has no value, then you can hardly claim that he's giving a gift to the kohanim. L'may nafkimina says the Gemara Kugon shegazal chametz. He stole from the ger chametz. The chametz was stolen before Pesach and had a great value. See, we in Yoni Dioma, it's not coincidental. The Amar Olav Pesach. Now the law is that chametz after Pesach is asur b'hana, and isuri hana have no shavius. You can't benefit from them in any way. In fact, today I gave a shiur at 9 o'clock, in which I claimed, according to Rav Soloveitchik at least, in the Rambam, that if you have chametz, you're not allowed to even give it to a dog that's walking around the streets. It's not your dog, it's not his dog, it's no one's dog. It's a behemoth's hefker. So that's how far the Torah says that you can't have any benefit whatsoever from chametz. And in that sense, the chametz is not sellable. It doesn't have any market value, because what are you going to do with chametz? You can't do anything with it. If we say Yorshim Havu, if we're going to say that the Kohanim step into the shoes of the Yorshim that don't exist, of the Ger, because the Ger left this world without any Yorshim, Hainu Hai, this is the same object, the Yarsi Moris, which they inherited. They inherited this chametz. Why? Because this chametz was coming to their father. In the meantime, a Gazan had stolen it, but he returned it. And they inherit the chametz. Unfortunately for them, as Yarshim, they're left with a piece of chametz that absolutely is valueless. It's Eino Shava Pruta. But that's what a Yorish does. He gets what he has. Whatever he inherits from his father. So you can imagine the case of a father who dies and he leaves chametz shavu'ot of a Pesach. That wouldn't in any way undermine the laws of Yerusha, and the son would inherit his father, even though the chametz is valueless. It's like I often think, when my father passed away, he left a lot of things that are total junk. And I told my wife, I would rather not do that. So, but we seem to have a tremendous pile of junk that has been accumulated over the last...
Sentimental value.
Yeah. Like, I don't even think it has sentimental value. That's the only thing I like about cleaning up for Pesach. You cut down the amount of rubbish that you have. You know? I once was talking to an Israeli, and I tried to figure out how to say junk in Hebrew. I know there's just no equivalent. You know, junk is just junk. You know, like an old bicycle that's been ruined and it's rusty, and you keep it in the garage and it's there until Bias Goel, and when you die, Nebuch the Yor should have to get rid of it. That's what people do when they lose a parent. Nebuch, they spend a lot of time just throwing things out. I remember my mother passed away, she had old pairs of eyeglasses, you know, that she hadn't thrown out. And I remember, you know, the whole Shiva, I was able to hold myself back. But after Shiva, when we started going through my mother's belongings, and I saw her eyeglasses, I just totally, totally fell apart. I was ice mensch. I was crying uncontrollably. Because, you know, you feel a certain closeness. I mean, it's by my mother's spectacles, you know. But anyway, you accumulate all this stuff. So you have Chametz Shavu'ot of Pesach. It's really worth nothing. Adarav, you have to pay the garbage collectors to come and clear out the chametz. But nevertheless, that's what the Yorish is all about. He yarshens that. But Iamrit Makabli Matanis Hava. If the Torah said that the Gazlan now has a special chiyuv matana, there are many, many different matanas we have to give to the Kohanim. Let's say, for example, Amafrish Truma, I take out a 60th or a 50th or a 40th and I give it to the Kohen. That's a gift, and that has to have value to it. Now I'm giving a gift of Chametz Shavu'ot of a Pesach. Thanks, but no thanks. That's not a gift at all. Is the Afra holo kayoev lamid? He's not giving anything of value, and therefore the Afra of the Alvahu, it's worth the dust on the ground. It's Isuri Ana. So in order to achieve kapara in this tzad, it's not sufficient that you do just to a maisa tashlum, you need a matana. It's a very interesting and sensitive integration of two elements here that we're combining into one. There's kapara and there's matana. I would have said that a kapara is just a nesina. All you need is just to functionally give it to him. But now the Gemara is assuming in the second tzad that the way that the Gazlan achieves kapara is through matana. Matana meaning giving the coin something of value. In fact, you may recall that we learned in the Mishnah not so long ago that once the kohanim of that mishmeres, of that mishmar, receive the money, as penalty, the kapara process has begun and it'll culminate with the asham, the carbon that's brought afterwards. It's all one unit. You can't split it. And the sequence is critical. All those things are going to come up again in our sugya. Rabbi Zeira Bar-Yehachi, Rabbi Zeira had the same question as Rava, but with one radical difference. He said, Afilum tim tzalomim makabli matana hava, holo iboilon dahi matonam rachmona dinesiv lahu. Even if I grant you that it was clear, and there was no debate about it, that the obligation incumbent upon the Gazan is a matana, even so, he can accomplish that matana through Chametz She'avol of HaPesach. And I never had a suffix about that. Why? Because what exactly is this matana? This is not your classical matana, which means Haknas Mamon, but this matana is to give back to the Kohen what he would have given back to the Nigzal. In other words, We're going to define this matana, according to Rabbi Zeira, from the perspective of the Nosein. That the Nosein is being meshiv, he's returning exactly the object of gzela, which means the chametz, in this case, of Lava Pesach. So therefore, if we define both the nesina of the Gazlan and the Kabbalah of the Kohen as part and parcel of Hashavas Hagzela, and that's what's going to engender the Kapara. Therefore, Hashavas Hagzela means that as long as the object that was stolen is intact, it hasn't been destroyed, the Chiyuv Hashava is accomplished through the Hefta, what he called the Be'en, the actual physical intact object. There's no Chiyuv Hashavas Domim to pay money unless in event that the chafetz is destroyed. But as long as the chafetz, in this case the chametz, is still alive and well, then there's no additional chi of nesina to the kohen. He just has to be mekayim the mitzvah of hashava. In other words, by fulfilling hashava's gzela, he delivers that gzela to the kohen as a nesina, but that's a nesina b'toras hashava. And therefore, Rav Zeira says, since he's being meshiv his gzela, the chametz is still intact. The Nesina is machmas, it's produced by the chiyuv of Hashavas HaGzela, insofar as that chiyuv could be fulfilled even with Isurei Anoach, Chametz Shavuot HaPesach, because that's the object that he stole, that generates the Nesina. Elakikom Iboil, and I want to reformulate the question that was formulated originally by Rava. Kigon, and now we get into the sugya called Maiser Behema. Now, what we have to know about Maiser Behema is that in general, with the exception of one category, when a person has 10 animals in his flock, he's got to take one of those animals and he's got to give it to the Kohen. And that's the Masechta called Masechta Bechoros, is dedicated to that. The only exception to that rule is Makabli Matana. If I receive gifts, then if I receive animals as gifts, the Mishnah Masechta Bechoros on Daf Nun Hey Amud Beis establishes that the recipient of the gift is not chayev in this matana, which is called Maiser Behema. So let's go through the Gemara inside. Elaki Kami Boilon, what is the suffix Kigon, or what's the nafkamina to this suffix Kigon, Shenaflu Lo Eser Behemos the Gezel Hager, the Kohen, had 10 animals that were paid to him as Gezel Hager. Again, I can't even imagine this, but maybe it's a case where somebody broke into the Ger's flock, you know, his corral, and he actually lifted 10 different behemoths. And now the Ger dies, he has no Yorshim, those 10 behemoths have to be given over to the Kohen. So let's imagine, for argument's sake, that that all 10 animals would accrue to one particular Kohen. So now, Mechayvel Afrusha Minayu, is he Chayav in Maisa Behema? Olo. And the Gemara says the following. Yorshim Havu Marzutra says that if I define the recipient, the Kohen, as a Yoresh, the Torah put him in the place of the Yorshim, there are no Yorshim. Is then the halach would be that the kohen now is chayav in Maiser Behemah, the Omar Mar, because we learned in Masechta Bechoros, as far as Yorshim is concerned, Kanu Bitfisas Habayis. And therefore, Chayovim, the Chayiv and Afroshas Maiser Behemah. Okay, what does this mean? Tfisas Habayis. So for this Rabosai, we have to say a few words about Shutfus, partnership. Now, the law is that not only is a makabel matana that I mentioned earlier, potu min ha-maaser, but also shutvim, partners, are also potu from maaser. Okay? And this also is a drush in the Gemara in Bechoros, based on a pasuk, if anybody wants to open up, I think there's a chumash somewhere here in the room, Shmos Chav Beis, Chav Ches, Chav Tes, Mitch, you don't have to bother. You know by heart.
No way.
Okay, go ahead, take a look. See if there's no printing error here. It should say, Bechor Banecha Titein Li, Kein Tasel L'Sharcha Ulitzonecha. Okay? So the word Sharcha implies private ownership, Sharcha Tzonecha, and it says Bechor Banecha. And the Gemara says that Bechor Banecha means that he inherited, but not a matana. So there's no chiv meiser behema, neither for a matana, nor for shutvim that have a common ownership. Logically, I would have said that Yorshim, if there's more than one Yoresh, should come under the category of shutvim, right? Because after all, what happens if there are many Yorshim? They split, they have an equal split, or whatever it is, Bechor takes pishnayim of the Yerusha. And that makes them shutfim. At this point, they're partners until such time as there's chalukas ha-yerusha. But the Gemara answers no, that these are not shutfim, but rather these are tfisas habayis. Tfisas habayis means they all own the entire yerusha together as one entity. We don't view each individual yoresh as a separate persona in legal terms. There's one persona, and that's called the Tfisas Habayis. They all own it together. That's not called Shutfim. Shutfim means that each Shutf owns his Chelek. I may not know exactly which is his designated Nachla, because we haven't divvied it up yet, but each one owns privately his animal. It's almost like Lamafreya kind of thing, meaning if I'm one of the Yarshim, I can't point to that animal and say, well, that animal is going to be mine. But after the Chalukah, when the animal falls into my lot, then I could say l'mafreya that I got this animal and it was mine from the get-go. That's called chalukas hashutfim. Now, in such a case, the Gemara makes a distinction between tfusas habayis of Yerusha and shutfim. In the case of shutfim, then what we're saying is that there's a general ownership of all the shutfim, and that's not called Bekarcho Tzonech. But in case of Yerusha, we only need the technicality of divvying it up to decide which one was Reuven's or which one was Shimon's, but it really belonged to them from the moment of the death of the father. And therefore, it's like private ownership. It's called Bekarcho Vitzonacha, and therefore it's Chayev in Maiser Behema. O Dilma, should we say Mekable Matonos Havu? Usnan, we have a mission in Masechta Bechoros. Halokeach. Lokeach means one who acquires ownership on 10 animals. Vanita lo b'matana. He received 10 animals as a matana. Is potur mi maser behema. He's potur because the Torah says that a matana is not included in Bechor Banecha. A Yerusha is included in Bechor Banecha, but a matana is not. Now, let's just try to understand. We're talking now about Rav Zeira. According to Rav Zeira, the chiyuv on the gazlan is a chiyuv hashava, which is meant to be a kapara for him. And at the same time, it's got to be delivered over to the kohen. Correct? So Marzucha says that if you ask me about Chomet Sha'ovalava Pesach, which means that the object has no value, that's fine, he says, because the giving to the Kohen is a step removed from the fundamental obligation incumbent upon the Gazan, which is Hashavas HaGzeila. And if the Chomet is the same Chomet physically that he stole, therefore he can return that Chomet and Shalom Al Yisrael. And if he's not returning it to the Gazlan, to the Nigzal, excuse me, he's already gone, he returns it to the Kohanim in this case, and that's Gezel Ager. But, nevertheless, when we turn the tables around, and we ask how the Kohanim are receiving this money, are they receiving it as Bimkom, replacement of the Yarshim, or are they receiving it as a Matana? Again, as far as the Gazlan is concerned, he's giving it B'Torah Hashavah. But as far as the Kohanim are concerned, they're receiving this money as what? As a matana, according to one side. If they're receiving it as a matana, there's a separate halacha that matana is potum from maisa. Again, even if that maisa would be worthless, I don't have a case, but if let's say you had a case of a behemas chavetz, you know, that was over lava pesa, or maybe we could talk about, let me just think. Let's say Klaya Kerem is also by Noah. So I don't know if Behemoth Klaim, I have to look that up. But let's say Behemoth Klaim were also by Noah, or he took a nether, I don't know, also by Noah. So the law would be that the Kohanim receive the object that was stolen, and they have the physical object. It doesn't matter one iota whether it's worth something on the market or it's Isuria none, it's worthless. But what would matter is that they receive it as a matana. And when you receive something as a matana, the matana itself is antithetical to the chiyuv ma'aser behema. The Torah says ma'aser behema, you're chayuv when you inherit something. But if you don't inherit it, but rather you receive it as a gift gratis, then you're potter from ma'aser behema. Toshma, the Gemara tries to come to some conclusion here. And we have a Tosefta in Chal in the second parak, Esrim v'arva matnos kahuna nitnu li'arno l'bonov. Okay, this always fascinated me, the phrase Aaron Ubonov. It appears over and over again throughout the Torah, in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Why did the Torah have to say Aaron Ubonov? I mean, just say Kohanim. Maybe the Torah wants to emphasize that in Kohanim, the method or the mechanism by which the Kohen gets his status is because of his father. It's not just that you're a Kohen, but you're the son of Aaron. You know who your father is, because otherwise you have no rights as a Kohen. In any event, all these 24 matanos come under a principle which is called klal prat uklal. Now, what's the klal prat uklal? So there's a pasuk in Bamidbar. We should really open it up again. Bamidbar yudches, pasuk ches. Okay, that's going to be the klal. And there at the beginning of the parasha it says, Vani hinena sati lecha es mishmeres trumasi lechol kodshe b'nei Yisrael lecha nasatim lemoshcha ulebanecha lechok olam. Now, at this point, the Torah does not specify any particular matanos. It just gives it in a general sense and calls it Mishmeres Trumosai. Mishmeres Trumosai. Nasati, and I gave it to your children, to Aaron's children. That's called a klal. Now, following that klal, the Torah goes into details about which matanos have to be given. Can you fill me in for that, Mitch? Which matanos? Okay. So for the karbonos, you have to give matanos to the Kohen. So I bring a karbon, and I give the basa and the ar and so on, we discuss to the Kohen. Then at the end of the parasha, if you fast forward to Pasuk Yutes, it says, Kol trumas hakodshim asher yorim bnei Yisrael, Lashem, Nasati L'chol Banech L'Nasech Ata Itcha L'Chakolam. That's already a klal. So we have here a klal prat uklal. Rashi, if you take a look in Dibra Maschil, Bichlal, if you see such a Rashi, I'm not sure which pasuk that Rashi is in. Oh no, I'm sorry, my mistake. The Beklal here is the Rashi here on our page in Masechta Bava Kamma. It's about 15 lines down from the top of the page. Good. So that's called the Klal Prat Uklal. And then with regard to the Kohanim, it says Ubris Melach, and the end of the pasuk is Olam Ubris Melach Olam Hi Lifnei Hashem. Now, what is this telling me? So the Braisa says the following. This is Tosefta in Chala. Kol Hamakaimon, anyone who merits fulfilling his obligation regarding these Matnas Kuhuna Ki Ilu Mekayim. It's as if he fulfilled the entire Torah. Why? Because of the Klal Prat Uklal. Okay, and that's called the Bris Melech Olam. Not only that, it's as if he was Mekayim all the Karbonos, because Bris Melech is the requirement that you have to add Melech to each Karbon. So how great is fulfilling the 24 Chiyuvim, the obligations of Matnas Kuhuna? It's as if he was Mekayim the whole Torah, and it's as if he was Mekayim all the Karbonos. Kol HaOver Aleihem, on the flip side, if he doesn't give these Matonis to the Kohen, Ki'ilu Over Al, it's as if he violated all the Torah, that all the Torah is Darsh and is subject to Klal Prat Uklal. So the Klal Prat Uklal here becomes paradigmic of the Torah. If you fulfill the Klal Prat Uklal, meaning the 24 Matonos, then you'll be Zocha to merit having the Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kulo. If on the other hand you violate the mitzvahs of Matnas Kuhuna, you violated the Klal Prat Uklal, which represents the entire Torah, and that's considered Bris Melach. That part of the Bris is more agadic. What we're interested in is the actual enumeration, V'elu Hen. Now it's interesting that this Bris divides up the Matnas Kuhuna into four different categories. Let's see them. The first category is Eser Bamigdash. There are 10 gifts that are given and eaten by the Kohanim in the Migdash. The Arba B'Yerushalayim. The Eser B'Gvulim. Okay, let's go through this one by one. The first group is Eser B'Migdash. And what does that comprise? Chatas Behema. Okay, Chatas Ha'Of. Ve'osham vadai, ve'osham tolui, ve'zivchei shal meitzibur, which is called shnei kvasim shel chagashvuos, ve'log shemen shel mitzora. Okay. U'mosar ha'omer, u'shtei alechem, ve'lechem aponim, ve'amenochos. So I don't know if somebody could make a quick count here. It should come out to 10. Does that make sense? And B'li Neder, if we have a chance, we'll go through all 10. Some of them are a little bit easier than others. Okay, the Shtei Alechem, for example, which is brought on Chag HaShavuos, is given totally to the Kohanim. Lechem Aponim, which are the 12 breads that are organized weekly, they are given totally to the Kohanim. And some of the other cases here are a little bit more complex. For example, the Zivchei Shalmi Tzibur refers to another unique karbon that's brought on Chag HaShavuos, which is called Shnei Kivsei Shalmei Tzibur of Chag HaShavuos. That's what we give, and that's what we bring on Chag HaShavuos. And again, the Kivsei Atzeres have very unique halachas. You have to be a bucking kodshim for that, but a lot of ink has been spilled on the status of the Kivsei Atzeres, or the what we call the Shalmei Tzibur. Normally a Karban Shlomim is a Karban Yachid, it's not a Karban Tzibur. And the Karban Tamid that was brought as a Karban Tzibur daily was not a Karban Shlomim. So the very odd combination of Shalmei Tzibur, that the entire Tzibur brings a Karban Shlomim, only exists on Chag HaShavuos. And then in the case of Mitzorah, the Mitzorah has to come for Hazah as part of his purification process, and within the context of his Hazah, he needs to bring a Lug Shemen. And some of that shemen is poured on his body, is sprinkled on his body, but there's always going to be what's called mosar shemen, leftover shemen, and that's given to the kohen. Alright, let's talk about Arba B'Yushalayim. Now we have the second group. So already we're leaving the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. All the above were Karbonos or Menachos. Now we're already in what we call Yushalayim. And what do we have here for the four Matonis in Yushalayim? We have HaBechora. That means Bechor Behemot Tahora. I have an obligation to bring my firstborn of a behemah on the mizbeach, and after it's hakrova, the basa has to be given over to the kohen. Veha bikurim, that we know from the shivas minei dagon, he has to bring the first fruits to Yerushalayim, and he places them on the mizbeach, and then the kohen receive that gift from the Mizbeach. And Hamuram Min HaToda. Now, when you bring a Karban Toda, so there's something called Chaz V'Shok. Chaz V'Shok really applies to any Karban Shlomim. But for some reason, I'm not sure why, he specifies the Karban Tamid here, and he mentions, I'm sorry, the Karban Toda here. Karban Toda, of course, is brought when you were saved in one of the four categories of Hatzolah. And you bring this carbon toad, and the chaz v'shok, which is different parts of the innards of the animal, are given to the kohen.
Rashi says there
are also four chalos. Shebos and carbon toad. In other words, a carbon toad has to be accompanied by 40 chalos, 30 of which are matzah, and 10 of which are chametz, and four of those chalos are given to the kohen. Okay, because again, muram means whatever you have to separate, and you can't eat yourself. So out of the 40 breads, 36 of them you can eat up, or you give it out to your friends. Okay? Those friends don't have to be kohen. It's very fascinating that it says that the whole idea of giving out bread to your friends in Karban Toda is pirsum hanes. The Torah wanted you to, you know, because they can ask you, why are you bringing these? Thanks for the bread, but you know, you're not my bread delivery man, so why are you giving me breads? And you're going to answer, because I had a great miracle. I was never sick in a hospital bed, and I got out now walking on all fours, on all twos, and here's my carbon toda. And then we have the El Nazir. Okay, when a Nazir completes his Naziris, he brings what's called a carbon shlomen. Shlomen is usually from an isle, a ram. And he brings this isle. It's got to be tamim without any blemishes. And major parts of the basar, the El Nazir, are eaten by the kohen. And the Nazir, when he brings his carbon shlamim, he will divvy up the basar amongst the kohen. That's called El Nazir. And finally, Oros Kodshim. Let's say a person gives a, you know, he brings the carbon ola, carbon chatos, these are kodshim kodshim. And the halacha is that the or is to be given to the kohen. So we have in Yerushalayim four matnos kohuna. Now, in the previous category of Migdash, we had chatos, behemah chatos, and we had osham. Correct? Those are karbonos that have the status of kodshe kodshim. Whereas in the second category, Yerushalayim, that's kodshim kalim. For example, bikurim, toda, el nazi, which is kavan shlomim. Or again, has a different status because it's not considered part of kodshe kodshim. So basically, the difference between kodshe kodshim and kodshim kalim is whether they can be eaten outside of the mikdash. And even if you classify the korban as a kodshim kalim, which allows you to eat it anywhere, which allows you to eat it outside Yerushalayim, you could only eat it anywhere in Yerushalayim, but not outside the bounds of Yerushalayim. Now then we get to something, the third category, which is called Kodshei Gvul. These are gifts that are given to the Kohanim, and they could be given anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. Notice the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael now comes to the fore. My Rebbe used to always say that even the Beis HaMikdash is really another form of the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Yerushalayim is another form of the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. The kedusha of Eretz Yisrael sort of dissipates, and as you get to more concentrated areas of kedusha, that very kedusha of Eretz Yisrael takes on a more profound status. So Yerushalayim has a greater kedusha than the rest of Eretz Yisrael, and that expresses itself in kodshim kalim, and the Beis HaMikdash has the highest level of Kedusha, of Eretz Yisrael, and that that's true for Kodshim. He has a footnote here in which he says that a Korban Chatas Behema is brought by a person who violates a Chiyuv Shogeg for which had he done it B'mezid B'chayv Kores, and that he quotes from Rashi. A Korban Chatas Ha'Of is brought by a Zav or a Zava, or a Yoledes or a Mitzorah. These are called Arba Mechusrei Kapara. And as part of the process, the clinching part of the process of the Tara, they have to bring a Karma. In each case, it's a different Karma. Fine, then he has a whole discussion here about Yashem Vada, Yashem Tolui, Ben Chatas Behema, Chatas Aof, Ben Korban Olav Yored for an Oni. There's a lot going on over here. But what we're interested in is the next category. That's Asara Begvulim. This is Kodshei Gvul. And we have a list of 10. And which one of the 10 interests us at this particular juncture? You guessed it, the last one. So we got to go through all 24 to get to the number 24. So what do we have? We have Truma. We have Trumas Meiser, we have Chala, we have Reish Sagez, we have Matonos, we have, pigeon. Should say Pigeon Aben here. Pigeon. Do you have a pay and a hay afterwards? That's an error in my Gemara. You just what do you have? Pigeon, no? Pay dollar. Yeah. Here it says pay hay dollar. That's a
Pigeon Aben. Haben.
Ah, I see. He added an extra hay over here for some reason. I don't know why. I think it's a printing error. Okay, Pigeon Peter Chamor, Ustei Achuza, Ustei Charamim, Gezel Ager. What do you have?
Yeah,
Gezel Ager. Yeah, finally got to Gezel Ager. The only thing I don't understand here, and this perplexes me, is Pigeon Aben. I mean, Pigeon Aben is only in Gvulin? There's no Pigeon Aben in Chutz Laretz? That's a Chiddush to me. Do we have any Bechoros here in the room? Don't all answer at once. You're a Bechor, Mitch? So I assume you had a Pigeon Aben in, I don't know, St. Louis. That's where you were when you were older. Borough Park, yeah. Well, Borough Park has the Din of Eretz Yisrael, so that's not a kash. In any event, Gezel Ager is the one on this list that's most interesting and relevant to us. A person stole from a ger, he took a shvur sheker, the ger died without any yorshim. He has to deliver the gezel, which is a keren and a chomish, to the kohanim, and that's considered a matana. So the Gemara adds the following comment, v'kakaris mi'a matana. If this brisa classifies Gezel Ager as a matana, shmami, no, we must derive the mekabli matanas hava. Shmamina, which means that when a person steals chametz from a ger, and then Pesach passes, he has to give to the kohanim. He has to give to the kohanim the value of the chametz as it was evaluated at the time that he stole it before it became chametz shavah Pesach, according to Rav at least. And now we have Rav Zeira, according to Rav Zeira, the kohanim now would not be chayev in the mitzvah of afashas ma'aser behema because a Makabel Matana, as we said, is potter from Meiser Behem. Okay, now we get back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Nosan es hakesef li anshe mishmar. Now the Gazlan paid up the anshe mishmar and he died. Now his heirs, his Yorshim, want to come back and say to the Kohen, give us back the money. We're not chayev in kapara. Amar Abaye, Shma Mina, Kesef Mechaper Mechza. That the delivery of the money from the Gazlan's hand to the hands of the Nigzal, or in this case the Kohanim, is already a Miktas Kapara. It's already a partial kapara. And this is what we've been saying over and over again, that the payment of Keren V'Chomesh is not just some sort of monetary penalty, but it's B'Torah's kapara for the double sin of stealing and taking a Shvuah Sheker. And therefore, even though, says Abai, he hasn't yet brought his Karban Asham, and the Gazel died, nevertheless, he can't, you know, the money is given, and during his lifetime he achieved X percentage of kapara, whatever that means. And its kapara is not viewed as a quality, but as a quantity, and we can split it up into its component parts. It's not an all or nothing endeavor. We say in Yiddish, adagar, adagarnished. But here it's not like that. You can get a kapara which is only partial by paying the penalty, and that's what he did. Then he died. He couldn't bring the korban asham, but he got a partial to ilo machap. If you're going to argue that there's no kapara whatsoever in paying these monies, hava amino, I would have said mahadar liyarshim, that in Okinami, as soon as he dies and the money that he, in his lifetime, this gazan delivered over to the Kohen is not machaper at all, then now the Yarshim should have a right to say, we want to get back my timer. Adaiti the Hachilo Yoevle. He didn't give a gift, wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm in the mood to offer a gift to the Kohen. I'm going to bring them this behemoth. No, that's not what he said. What he said was, he wants to be machaper for his gzela. And therefore, the Torah says, you have to give it to the Kohen. And that's the way you'll achieve your kapara. Well, he didn't bring his korban asham yet, but at least he did that first stage in the process. Namely, he delivered the monies to the kohanim. And you might think that until he brings his korban, nothing has happened, and the status of giving the money over to the kohen is not independent, doesn't stand on its own. And therefore, if he died, Nebuch, he didn't even begin this process of kapara. Let the Yarshim now inherit, I shouldn't say inherit, first we have to force the Kohanim to cough up the money and return it to the Yarshim. And it seems to me that this Gemara of Abaye is totally irrelevant to the previous sugya, meaning it matters not where the Kohanim are receiving it as Yarshim, or they're receiving it as a Makabal Matana. It doesn't matter one iota, because you know, this the Adaite, the Achilo Yoev, is always going to be pressing, whether he gave it as a Matana or he passes it over as a Yerusha to the Kohanim and the Kohanim Yarshin, but it's all because the Gazan came forward with his own initiative, with his own Das, and he wants to achieve Kapara. Well, sorry, he died without achieving Kapara before he brought the Korban Asham. Then that giving of the money was not meaningful, because it wasn't Adaiti Dahaki. So now the Gemara has a problem with Abai. If Abai is saying that the money is delivered to the Kohen in and of themselves, that delivery of the money is a kapara, call it a mechza of a kapara, elameyata, if this be the case, is chatas shemesu balea, when a person was magdish a karbon because he wants to achieve kapara, then his whole akdasha was akdash al das that he would be able to achieve this kapara. Now he dies, is tepuk l'chulin. The entire akdasha is completely null and void. It was done on the false premises. Little did he know that he was about to die. Had he known he was about to die, he wouldn't have brought the karban. Now again, in general, when you hear the words chatos shemesu balea, what that means is yira ad sheyistayev. That means the karban is a valid karban, the kedushas karban is intact, but the karban cannot be brought on the mizbeach, so we wait until it gets a mum. Here we're saying that the karban is no longer karban, the behema is no longer behemas mizbeach in kodesh, it becomes behemas chulin. That's what's called in a generic sense das betos. Whatever a person does midaito, and he was mistaken, there were facts that he didn't know about, maybe he couldn't have known about them. Had he known, he would never have entered into this transaction. That's called das tos. If a person is magdish, an animal, and he assumes he'll be able to achieve kapara, lo and behold, he dies and he can't achieve kapara, then his whole das in being magdish the animal was predicated on a mistake. and that's called Das Mutes. And this seems to be the premise that underlies Abai's statement. Abai's saying that if there was no kapara in bringing the Keren V'Chomish over to the Kohen, if there was no kapara, then the money would certainly be returned to its original owner. He's not alive, but at least his Yarshim will pick it up. And the reason for that is Adaiti D'Hachi Lo Yoyevle, that Hakdosha, or in this case the Nesina, was done with an implicit condition. Again, Rav Osa, you could ask me, what do you mean an implicit condition? I mean, the whole assumption of Abai is antithetical to everything we know. We have a principle called Dvarim Shebelev Lo Avi Dvarim. You want to make a Tanai, you've got to explicate the Tanai. You know, we're not going to second guess you and figure out, well, what motivated you to enter into this transaction, what would have satisfied you, what conditions did you have in your mind that have to come to pass. No, it all depends on what you said, what you spoke about explicitly. And yet here Abai is saying that Adaiti D'Hachi Lo Yoevle, had he known that he would die before he could bring the kapara, the karbon, he never would have given the money to the kohen. So the answer to this question is famous in the name of the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi was famous for saying that Dvarim Shebelev Lo Avi Dvarim only applies when it's a subjective feeling. But if it's Belibo Ubelev Kol Adam, if anyone on the face of the earth, if they would have been in that same set of circumstances, would have had the same conditional das, then if it's Belev Kol Adam, it's no longer Dvarim Shebelev. And based on that clear-cut objective umdino, we can establish a Tanai, even though he never made that Tanai, but we can analyze his feelings and his thoughts and his motivations and come up with a Tanai. So here Abai says when a person pays this penalty, he wants to achieve kapara. If he died, then he should be able to get a kickback. He can't get the kickback because he's dead, but the Yarshim can. If that be the case, then anybody who is Magdish a carbon and dies before the carbon is Nikrav al Gavi Mizbeach, that carbon should revert back to its original state of Chul. Omri, so the Bnei Yeshiva came to Abaye's support, came to support Abaye and answer this question. Chatas Shemesa Mesu Balea Hilchasa Gmiralon, which means this halacha that When the owner of the chatas dies, the karbon remains a karbon. That's Aloch L'Moshe Misinai. Demi L'Misa Ozla. That he oleches L'Misa, L'Misa Ozla. Meaning we can't bring the karbon on the Mizbeach, we have to wait for the karbon, the behemoth, to die. But in any event, we don't learn and derive conclusions from Aloch L'Moshe Misinai. But you know what? The truth is that this answer in the Gemara leaves us very wanting, very uncomfortable. What do you tell me, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai? Halacha L'Moshe Misinai tells me that the Chatas Shemesu Baleha is Holech L'Misa. And there's no Afka, there's no removal of the original Hakdasha. Okay. You have Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, but now the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai has to fit into some sort of perspective. Otherwise, we're going to derive the conclusion that, in general, we don't care about his das. Abai is very concerned about his das. You know, he wants to know that his money is being given to the Kohen as a kapara. So, honestly speaking, he has a footnote here in the name of the Chazon Ish, and anyone's willing, you know, invited to photocopy this and figure out what the Chazon Ish is saying. I just would say the following. I don't think the Chazon Ish is saying this, but this is what I would say. What the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai is saying is something about the Kedushas HaKarbon, that once a person was Magdish HaKarbon, the carbon takes upon itself, the animal now achieves a certain status, a certain chalushem, and that legal status is that it has to be nikrav al gabi mizbeach. The din of akrav al gabi mizbeach is chal in the gufa of the karban. You want to talk about the das of the person who was magdish the karban. That's irrelevant, because since that das, and then he had a dibur in which he said zechata harei zuchatas, that engenders a kedushas karban on the chatas. Now the din is that the chatas is an entity on its own. The karban now is koveh its own dinim as a cheftishol karban. And it's koveh the din that it has to be nikra val gabi mizbeach. If it can't be nikra val gabi mizbeach, then let it die a slow death as a balas mum. And that's called yirad shiyistai. But that has nothing to do with our question about a gazan who gave money to the kohanim, and what was the das, what motivated him, what did he expect to get from this nesina, and didn't get it all. Elameata, says the Gemara, is asham shemesu balav lepuk lechulim, kevan di adaiti dahachilo afreshe. The same logic that we asked about a chatos, we can now ask about an asham. Frankly, I don't know why the Gemara feels compelled to go through every single karban here. Asham nami ilchasa gmir lekol shebechatos mesa bi asham roa. And roa means we wait till it gets a mum, and so forth and so on. Oh, now here's a fascinating case from both sides. For those of you who like the gossip that goes on today in the Orthodox world, and mostly in the friction between what I call the modern Orthodox world and the ultra-Orthodox world, if you like that kind of gossip, you then listen up to the next piece of Gemara. Okay? Elameata, the Gemara says that if you apply the logic of Abaye, his principle is Adaiti Dehachi Lo Yoivle, is Yevama Shenafla Lifnei Mukashchin Tepuk Belo Chalitza Dadaiti Dehachi Lo Kitcha Atzma. A woman receives Kiddushin from one of two brothers, and she's very happy with the marriage. Unfortunately, her husband dies without children. She falls for even to his brother. His brother's a mukashchin. Nobody wants to marry a mukashchin. He's got boils all over his body, never, right? Is now the law is that this mukashchin has to deliver chalitza to allow her to marry any other man. Says the Gemara, if Adaiti the Hachilo Yoivle, when she received kiddushin from her first husband, ask her the following question: would you have married this guy had you known A, that he would die without children, and B, that you would fall for yibum for a mukashchin? And by the way, if she falls for yibum for a mukashchin, this guy might be at the end of the world, and who knows, you know, if you can get him here for a chalitza. And we call him up on the phone long distance, we say, Mr. Mukashkin, would you be willing to take a flight, you know, a transatlantic flight from New York to Yerushalayim in order to deliver chalitza? And he says, what's chalitza? You know what I mean? He never heard of chalitza, and he's not interested. He's busy going to doctors, you know, dermatologists. Man, a mukashkin is like a godsend for a dermatologist. My gosh. And they charge even more than the eye doctors, I think, no? That's why everybody in their uncle wants to get into the specialty after they finish. I don't know about you, Mitch, but I know when my son graduated Einstein, like, you know, everyone's trying to get into dermatology internship, you know, specialty. But you can't, it's impossible. Only the few geniuses on the face, because everybody wants to be a dermatologist. There's no urgency in helping a teenage girl with acne, you know what I mean? They don't wake up in the middle of the night, but they pay good money. Okay, now I don't know about after all the new things, I don't know, you know, all the Xeris in America, I don't know, maybe it's a little different, you know. How much you pay Uncle Sam? Because anyway. So this is a great deal. Adaita the Hachi Lo Yavi. She never would have agreed to marry her first husband had it dawned upon her that she would fall for Yibam in front of a Mukashchin. So let's annul the original marriage. Does that sound familiar to you? Let's annul the original marriage. That's what they're trying to do over here. Okay. So the Gemara answers, Hasam there, Anan Sahadi, and here I think we have to turn to Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, De Menach Nichaluhu Bekalduhu. The Gemara assumes that when a woman agrees to get married, then she wants to marry a man, even though she knows and she realizes that there is a possibility that he will die and she'll fall for yibum to a mukashkin. By the way, I mentioned before the Beis HaLevi is of the opinion that this whole sugya is only relevant, the Shakla V'Tarya, to Erisin and not Nisuin. Once a woman has Nisuin and she's actually living with her husband, then there's no possibility of undermining and annulling the original marriage. And therefore the whole discussion here, which is only a Havamina, that maybe we can annul the marriage of Lamafreya when she finds out the bad news that she falls for a Mukashchin, that's only if there was Erisin without Nisuin. Today in our time, that's almost unheard of. It is unheard of. The Omer Reish Lakish, Kidder Reish Lakish, the Omer Reish Lakish, Tav Lemesav Tandu, Lemesav Armalu. A woman wants to be married, and that's called Tandu. Tandu means two bodies together, and she's willing to go very far in order to make sure that she's married. Lemesav Armalu, because she doesn't want to sit as an old spinster alone. Armalu is an almana. Again, she's not an almana, she hasn't even been married yet, but it's like an almana, and this is all a mushal. And this is what it means, that the women want to be married, and therefore they, you know, they'll take anybody, so to speak. And therefore, even though in this case they never would have agreed to marry a Mukashchin, but they married the Mukashchin brother. So I wanted to read you a footnote here in the name of the Chavas Yoyer. Do we have another minute or two?
Yeah.
Oh. So the Chavas Yoyer, do we have any Yekis here in the room? And if you're from the old time Germans, so the Chavas Yoyer, his name was Bachrach. He lived about four centuries ago. He was one of the greatest poskim amongst the early Ashkenazic Achronim. And he writes the following. He says the following, Kosu atosvis, shemedubar kan v'yavama shehit arsa v'adayin lo nisa. They were talking about a case of a woman who fell for Yibum because she had erisin with the first husband, her late husband, and not nisut. He says, mikol makom, nevertheless, kevan shebizmana kedushin lo yada shekodem shetinase. She didn't realize, didn't dawn on her that before she enters into the marriage, the chuppah, tipo lifnei mukashchin, her husband's going to die, and she falls for the mukashchin. Im kein hayenoach lo lehiskadesh lebaila. She's very happy to accept the kedushin lebaila. In other words, this principle of Reish Lakish is going to tell me that even though we're only talking about Erisin, she is so eager to accept Erisin that she'll do so because she doesn't know, she doesn't realize that she's going to fall for even to a Mukashchin. Now, if that be the case, then She'elas HaGemara, the whole Gemara's question is She'ispatlu HaKedushin, that maybe the Kedushin should be invalid, even though she didn't make a t'nai, is because since she was of the opinion, Savra, She'ein Isha Rotze, Lipo Lefnei Yov Mikubkun, is Kayemis Belev, Ubelibo Shel Kol Adam. As we said before, the Beis Halevi insists that if you evaluate her lev and the lev of anyone in that situation, none of them would want to get into a marriage where they end up married to a Mukashchin. And therefore, what's the Gemara's answer when the Gemara activates the principle of Reish Lakish? Ain kavanas hagmar l'tari shekol isha ba'olam, every single woman in the world misratzes lihinase afilu sheitochen shetipol lifnei yavam mukashchin. The Gemara's not coming up with this umdana that every single woman is so excited about marriage that she's willing to get married even though she'll fall for Yibum for Mukashchin Ella, but rather Kevin Shiyesh Noshim Shemisratzos Lekach. There are some women is Memela Einkan Dvarim Shebelev Belev Kol Adam, and therefore you need a Tanai. Again, the only reason why we could obviate the need for a Tanai is because it's Belev Kol Adam. It's obvious, it's objective, and that's absolute and universal. But here, some women may say, "I'd rather be married than unmarried." And therefore, since she did not say a word, B'shas Kedushin, to set up a T'nai, meaning she could have said, oh, I'm only entering into this Erisin if and when there's Nisuin with this husband, so I can live with him as a wife with a husband, and then, Chas V'Shalom, if he dies, I'll have to fall for Yibu. She didn't say that. And in the absence of such a statement, we're going to assume that if a person doesn't make a T'nai, he accepts the situation as is, is mistabish eretzonu l'skadish afilu al das ken, that she has an absolute unconditional will to marry this guy, even if this whole terrible situation will arise. And at this point, the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah. So we're going to have to remember what it says in the Mishnah about those two Mishmaros, Yehoyariv and Yedaiah. You remember that name, Yedaiah? That was one of my favorite names. So in Mirza Shem, we'll talk about Yedaiah and Yehoyariv on the next occasion. The Mishnah says, Nosan es hakesev li yeho yariv, and the asham li yedaya is yotza. So he gave the money to yeho yariv, and then yedaya received the asham. We don't know exactly who's on duty, which mishmeres is actually in the Mishkan, in the Migdash. If on the other hand he gave the asham to yeho yariv and the kesev to yedaya, then it all depends, if you remember, on whether the Asham is still alive and well, in which case the Bnei Yedaiah could be makriv the karva. But if not, yachsir v'yavi Asham achir. Tanur Rabbana, we learned in a brisa, nasana Asham liyahu yariv, and he gave the kesef, meaning the keren and the chomesh. Liyedaiah is yachsir Kesef Eitzel Ha'osham. This brisa has a shita, which we'll see, is identified with Rabbi Yehuda, that if the Gazlan gave the Karban Osham to the Mishmeres of Yoyariv, and then he gave the Kesef, which is the Keren and the Chomesh, to the Mishmeres of Yedaiah, Yachzir HaKesef Eitzel Ha'osham. That means that the Mishmeres of Yedaiah will have to return the Kesef to the Mishmeres of Yehoyariv, because Yehoyariv had received the Asham. Chachom omrim yachzir Asham Eitzel Kesef. On the contrary, the Bnei Mishmeres Yehoyariv will have to deliver the Karban Asham to the Bnei Mishmeres Yedaiah, and the Gemara is now going to embark on an analysis of what the Machlokes is all about. So we'll pick that up next time.